I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to In The Pocket. My name's Johnny.
And my name's Chris.
Two totally average bass players, and we're here to talk all about that bass. As well as answering your questions at home, each week we take a look at the latest news, maybe break down some tones, all to give you the lowdown on the low end. Now, as you can see, this is a bit of a different episode as to what we would normally be doing. We are here in the wonderful Ashdown HQ with Managing Director.
Hello.
With Dan here to talk a little bit about Ashdown Amps, place in the industry, how things are going at the minute, and to nerd out about all things bass, of course. Before we go on to that, Chris, are you okay being here in the flesh?
It is quite strange being this close to you, I'm not going to lie. It's usually about a 2.5 hour drive away from you. So to be, you're a real person. Feels strange.
You can cut the sexual tension with a knife. <it's lovely. laughs>
No, it's good. I like it. Yeah, cool. We should do this more often.
Yeah, should we move in?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Rent's perfect. Cheap.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah,
no,
absolutely.
Okay,
all right.
Okay.
Dan, thanks so much for joining us, being willing. You're fresh off of a trip to China.
Yes, quite. No, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, and thank you for making the pilgrimage down to our headquarters here in sunny old Essex. I know both of you have travelled a long way, and very grateful for that and your time. It's been an interesting couple of weeks, to be honest. We've been about a bit. And it's been great getting out and seeing people and actually getting the feedback. And I think our relation kicked off the Birmingham Guitar Show back in March, where we... Was that March? It was March. March, February, March, something like that.
It's so long ago now.
It does. And it was. I can't believe where the time's gone. But meeting there for the first time and then subsequently getting you a few of our new Roasted series of basses down to check out and for your feedback and comments and... Yeah, for a range that we're extremely proud of and happy with. And being able to visit the factory last week in China was phenomenal. And seeing what they can do, different finishes, different options, and just the attention to detail that they have as a factory was, it was great to see and witness. And as was many things over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, we haven't been able to physically get to the factories that we've worked with for years. And seeing the way that they've developed and grown and being able to kind of come up with new ideas together. It was an invaluable trip and great use of time. Also, we had the Shanghai Music Show, which has always been quite a big show from the demise of Messer Frankfurt and others within the industry. Having a show of that stature in Shanghai is incredible. And actually to see people putting an effort into their displays and booths and everything else for an industry that I've done NAMM for the last 2 years, to say that that's diminished in scale is an understatement, but it's an important part of our industry is getting out and being with people.
I think that like your presence at all those shows really makes a difference as well. You know, a lot of people, and you see it in lots of industries now, are skipping out on those kind of shows now. I think it's brought to light how opener company of Ashdown is to get out there, and I've been seeing you guys so much more out and about.
Thank
and
you.
In the world and you know promoting the brand, which is amazing.
It's what it's all about, and for us we thrive on that real-time feedback that you don't get via Zoom or meetings or product trainings that are done virtually. It's about getting out and spreading the word of Ashdown. We're a little family business fundamentally. There's a team of 9 people here, and what we've been able to achieve over the years and prior to this, we're very fortunate and never take that for granted in many respects. And prior to this and what we've done within BASE, I'm very fortunate for the position I hold within the company. But fundamentally for me, I left school at 16 and moved to Paris to become a studio engineer, and then dad needed someone to work in the factory at the time. And so for me, I never really wanted to work for my dad because it's a difficult thing to kind of balance and also live in those footsteps to an extent. But that was never a concern at the time. It was just an opportunity. He needed someone to work at the factory, and it's the right thing to do is to kind of work your way up in this position. So that was back in 2001. And subsequently, yeah, here we are today. Ashdown started its life in 1997 after my father previously had a company called Trace Elliott, which he established up to a big company and sold it to Command Music in 1992. And then was let go in 1996-97 when his contract was up due to them downscaling their American operation and European entity as such at the time. And subsequently set up Ashdown. Ashdown is my mother's maiden name, family name, for those of you that didn't realise. It's very much a family-run, family-orientated business. I've never known anything different, and I've had a very privileged upbringing from this side of the industry, really. Not known anything different. It's always been about bass amps.
But it's in your blood.
And that is a slogan we've used in the past of bass in the blood and stuff that goes with it. But it really is. I couldn't imagine doing anything different in that respect. Developing bass amps, being around bass players my entire life, music stores, being able to kind of visit music stores consistently, it's can be an expensive hobby, especially if you've got a bit of a tendency for musical equipment and everything else that goes with it, which...
That's a problem relate. I've got at the minute. Tomorrow, you're going to have that problem.
No.
Credit cards were invented for a reason. Not advising getting into debt.
This is not financial advice.
No, it really isn't. However, when it comes to gear and everything else like that, there's such an aesthetic, eye-peeling thing. I'll tell you we launched the Geezer Butler Head of Doom back at whenever it was, NAMM 2018, something like that, 2017. Might have been earlier than that, but we had the two next to each other, the ABM and the Geezer Butler Head of Doom. The ABM, the Head of Doom is a slightly tweaked version of the ABM, but fundamentally you set them the same. They are fundamentally running at the same element, but you put two side by side, and people will gravitate towards the Geezer Butler Head of Doom just because of the aesthetic that goes with it. So it was kind of a first-hand envision of kind of people really do listen with their eyes. And I know it's a counterintuitive saying, and no, it doesn't make sense whatsoever, but they do. Everything's got to stand out. And this day and age and everything that's going towards a smaller footprint, a digital footprint, for us it's always been about an aesthetic that stands out, but also it's got to be, the product's got to function. It's got to do what it says on the tin. And from day one, my father named the Ashdown Bass Magnifier, an Ashdown Bass Magnifier, the ABM.
Yeah.
And the idea with Magnifier was to make the instrument sound bigger. It wasn't about making it louder. It does that naturally, but to emphasize the instrument was a key component in that conception, and learning what he'd developed in the past at Trace Elliott and such, and with our electronics engineer at the time, a gentleman called Clive Button, subsequently now Dave Green, working with us, has been for the last, or since 2006 exclusively, and an amazing engineer. But to kind of keep bass simple, it needed to be effective, it needed to be powerful. Originally the first ABM had one knob on it, and it was just volume because it didn't need anything.
It did
more
everything
than that. Exactly, it really did. On. And the VU meter was put on to identify the brand.
Was that always there, the VU meter?
Yeah, always from the get go. Because Trace Elliott had the UV light, it had the LED clipping light, and everything else that went with it. But yeah. Ashdown needed something to identify itself and be able to spot it across stages. Subsequently, we have the hashtag spot the VU. But that was for me as a kid, where we'd be watching Top of the Pops or you'd be at a festival, and it would be spot the VU.
Yeah,
because you
course,
could see
yeah.
it for miles. And that was to be able to kind of develop a product that you could immediately identify was key.
You've almost done it as if, you know, the Apple logo. is just, you know, it's Apple immediately. I was just thinking while you were speaking then of other companies in the musical field that have like a kind of a logo. I mean, I know there's things like there's Gibson, there's Fender, but that's the name, similar to how like Ashdown has the sort of winged almost like car style on the front grille.
Yep.
But I was trying to think of something that's like the VU meter, which you could draw, you know, with a pen very quickly if you wanted to. I see that even from a distance, like you said, on stage at a festival or a gig, and immediately go, huh, Ashdown.
Yeah.
I can't really, can you think of anyone that really has like a, no. not text, it's got to be like a, you know, like Apple, McDonald's, Nike, Ashdown.
Well, it's same level. The other thing I like, you said about, you know, the wings you can see everywhere, and you see them across stages of all levels across the world as well, from, you know, starters and beginners all the way up to pro level. And that's something that I've always really enjoyed about Ashdown,
yeah,
that it's been for everyone, that yeah, everyone can afford it at some level. And you absolutely started off, yeah, with like the half wing, you know,
yeah, the little small, yeah, with the ABM and everything else that went with it. But everything from Ashdown has kind of derived from the ABM, really. And it was throughout the ages of trying to make that more affordable for people. We introduced the electric blue line, the mag line, and then similarly the triple A. Well, no, it was the 515 after 8 perfect 10 that we did originally in the practice amp range, which was our first venture into small combos. Generally speaking, prior to that, it had always been sort of 200 watts and above. But the After Eight was the first venture into that practice amp market. And it's always been about trying to achieve an affordable but effective product, reliable, serviceable, if the need ever arises. And it's always been about engineering a product to last. There's so much today that's disposable. And I think everything that we've done from day one, you're able to repair it down to a component level. Many of those components are still available today for products that we've been manufacturing for 25, 30 years. And we can still service them. None of them will end up in landfill. And it's quite an important factor in everything that we design and engineer. But it's also, as I was saying earlier, the feedback and real life feedback from visiting shows, working with artists, take those comments very seriously. And a lot of our product development is artist and customer led. It's not from us sat in a dark room thinking, "Ooh, that'd be fun." even though sometimes it happens, and then it's convincing others that it was fun, and we end up with products that some work, some don't. But we always remain innovative in what we want to achieve, and we always have a clear vision of that at day one before we start a road down a path of development, which could take a while. But again, being a small team of 9 people, we're able to react differently to others. Our design team here consists of sort of 3 people, effectively myself, my father and Dave Green. And then the feedback that we receive is invaluable to those products that we develop. And it can lead you down rabbit holes. I mean, we've developed the wonderful Ashdown audio engineering products, the monitors, fantastic as they are, it's a very difficult market. And for us, over the last sort of 18 months, the need to focus on our base offering has been key, which you will be seeing some very new and exciting products in the coming months. And you've seen recently as well, we've never sat still in terms of product development. It's always been something that it's driven our passion for everything we do. We don't get the opportunity, I don't think, in any other industry to kind of sit there and develop an amp that's going to be used by Nate Mandel, by John Myung, by Geezer Butler. But that in itself, that whole process was quite organic in that sense. It wasn't a forced relationship. We didn't try too hard, if you know what I mean. It wasn't, yeah, we're very fortunate for those relationships and those opinions from day one with John Entwistle with The Who, wanting something a bit more control over the clarity. So the addition of the sliders, instead of just 3 bands, bass, middle, treble, the 4 sliders were added to give those specific frequencies the opportunity to stand out, especially in John's style of playing.
So many influences from different people coming in. That's awesome.
I was going to say, the 4 names you listed then is an incredibly wide range of people, like everything from John Entwistle just to people who are still playing now, like, you know, John Myung from Dream Theater, Nate Mendel from the Foo Fighters. Yep. I was thinking of Brian Marshall from Alter Bridge as well.
And again,
they almost occupy their own spaces, but it's all under the same.
And we've been so lucky for those relationships. I mean, Nate walked into Bass Northwest in Seattle and bought his first ABM. We didn't know. We got contacted by the tech that they're thinking about taking out on the road. And that was in 2002. And I still remember those phone calls and that original relationship starting. And then the same goes with John Myung. He bought his from Sweetwater without us knowing. We got contacted subsequently. I mean, Jeff Arment, Pearl Jam, he uses the ABM 600 in a chrome rack mount finish that we did. But his tech built them into these heads that looked like big Marshall heads, which was cool. But we didn't know that had happened. We got contacted after the fact. And again, a lot of those relationships have been organic, and going on to other bass players. Pino was such an influence in the early days of Ashdown, and his playing style and everything that goes with it. The addition of the subharmonic generator was for that effect. And Pino's always been a go-to for feedback and anything else that goes with it. The work that he did with D'Angelo was solely, and all of his stuff in the studio. We built him back in 1998 an ABM 500, and we signed it. Every member of the factory at the time signed the amp, and he's still got it to this day in his studio, and it's still his go-to recording amp. And a lot of that, yeah, my father was a keen advocate for kind of pushing those relationships and establishing them in a big way. I mean, even going on to a different element, but Mark King of Level 42, the early days for Ashdown, he was such a brand ambassador for us. We did the Mark King signature amp. But prior to that, Mark was looking for something different. He just started using Fenders again. He wanted something warm and articulate, and two conflicting factors many times in bass amps. You get kind of an articulate hi-fi amp, such as an SWR or Trace Elliott, and then you get the warm, woolly sort of SVTs of this world that serve a purpose. But combining the two was always kind of the aim of Ashdown at the time. Music was changing, trends were changing. It wasn't about bright pop and aggressive bass. It was about something that sounded as good as it looked and worked. And fundamentally, that's the be-all and end-all for our relationships, is the product's got to stand up for itself. It's nothing without... we're nothing without the product. If the ABM wasn't such a go-to or a versatile amp or a reliable amp, people wouldn't use it for as long as they have. We don't give gear away. We don't hold our artists to ransom. We don't pay them any money. I think that's a testament to the brand and the product.
I mean, just being here today, we can already tell, like, we're gonna come away like, yeah, like, these guys really care from concept to completion to everything after sales, you know, everything.
Yeah,
I say done by, like, what was it, 8-9 people in house now? That's for a global brand, you know, that's mad. But I love that.
Yeah.
The fact that you're there at the shows and getting all that feedback from everyone
really allows it's you constant.
To innovate with what people want at the time.
I don't think you get from other industries as such, because it's such a small one. It really is. Being able to go to trade shows and catch up with the entire industry in 2 to 3 days is phenomenal. Yeah. But doing NAMM this year, doing Sweetwater Gear Fest, doing product training at Sweetwater and with others, and opening up Guitar Center differently in America and doing America differently with Ashdown USA this year, powered by Music Max, has opened up some different avenues and different doors for us in the US. With the support of the UK retail and everything that goes with it, we're very fortunate for those relationships also on a business and commercial level. If you wanted to go into the boring details of the day-to-days, because it isn't a traditional business in the sense, well, it is a traditional business. We don't sell particularly direct to the public. We go through retailers and distributors globally. That can have its challenges within this world of most of the consumers wanting to go direct to manufacturers. I know over lockdown, we were able to do that in a different way because we communicated differently. We got rid of a lot of B stock. And after sort of 27 years in business, you end up accumulating a lot of stuff, for want of a better word. And we ended up selling direct and communicating differently direct with our public audiences, something that we'd not really pushed before. But now it's opened up those opportunities with the likes of the Roasted Bases and such. Mm. They're going to be available direct from our website and probably via the Fine Folk at Reverb also. Mainly direct, without the support of the retail market that's there. The opportunities are there for the retailers if they so wish to stock the products. But at the moment, it's the stringed market is quite a competitive one to get involved into. Yeah.
Let's touch on that a minute.
Yeah.
Because you guys started, and when I did some content on the Roasted range, and people were like, I can't. You know, I thought these were like way more money than what they are because they'd seen the bases you've released previously.
You know,
that took people by, you know, they were shocked. They're like, these bases look so good at this price range. I mean, what made you guys want to divert from the amps and go explore other markets, including the bases?
The need to diversify in one instant, but also it's an extension of the brand. I got fed up of displaying other people's bases on our booths.
Really? I don't want to see that Fender up here. No.
People gravitate towards an instrument. They don't necessarily gravitate towards an amp. It's a difficult thing and a different thing. So if it's an extension of you as a brand, at a show, it's easier to kind of convey that story. People are drawn to the instruments because they do look good.
You have a connection to it.
And yeah, absolutely. That was really one of the core reasons, is it's an extension of us.
How did the sort of concept or the initial idea for the Roasted series come about?
I was talking to Joe here in the office, and we came up with an idea of doing sort of some ice cream truck themes was the original concept. And Joe was like, what if it could have a roasted maple neck? And I was like, oh, well, I can ask.
And then, so what if we're going to have a waffle neck?
neck. And then we did them, and we received the first samples, and they had a roasted neck. And I was expecting it naturally to have a roasted board, but we received them with roasted necks, but maple boards, because they hadn't put two and two together at the time. It was a miscommunication. So we ended up with this hybrid of a roasted neck with a maple board.
You play one of the jazz basses in Berlin. And I was just like, this thing is awesome.
And right? it started developing the bits, and I took one up to Biffy Clyro, just going back out on tour again. It was last November, I think. I went up to rehearsals with James and took him one of the Saints in the Onyx Green. And the Onyx Green came about with the love of cars again. It's kind of, Fender got the Mustang and Ford America has the Mustang. We had the Capri. There was a green that Ford used, and it was called Onyx Green. And that green kind of inspired the whole Capri range. And then it was kind of an idea of having they had Go Faster stripes on at one point. We were going to go down that whole route. But again, matching headstocks were important. We wanted to fit only three colours to keep the kind of the skew count low. And then it sort of turned out into, it was going to be five models. And then it ended up, we narrowed it down to just three models in the end.
What other models were there?
There were jazz basses, there were P basses, there were traditionals of that sense. But for us, it was like, I don't really want, everyone's doing, you can get a great jazz or P bass, full stop. From the Betsy's and that they're doing with the bass collection to the Harley Benton's that they're doing at Toman, you can buy a great P bass. But something that we wanted to do was trying to create a bit more of a unique identity with the Saint and that offset body design that originally it was called a Grab Tang, because it kind of had this... it had the grabber bottom, and it had the Mustang horns and the whole thing.
It did.
It's got that kind of bigger bottom to it that the grabber did.
Nice.
So inspired by a love of bass guitars through the ages, we kind of stuck with that shape. And then, of course, the low rider in a matte black finish. Originally, it was going to have some active pickups in it, but we opted against that just due to the fact that people can modify them if they so wish. The cavities in the back of the instruments lend themselves to that possibility.
And that's done on purpose.
Absolutely.
That's actually a really good point. I didn't know that. I've got a Squire jazz bass that I modded with active pickups.
Yep.
And it is absolutely not designed to allocate a 9-volt battery and
no,
stuff.
No, you so, don't have the space within the...
Yeah, but it opens up a really good thing. And one, it keeps the price point lower because you're not paying for...
Yeah, absolutely.
XYZ yep. preamp and pickups and stuff. But you've kind of left the door open for kind of like a younger musician
yeah.
who's maybe got the low rider. They like that, but they want to mod it. Like I modded one of my first guitars when I was a teenager. But you, like I said, you've left that open to them,
yeah.
which is a really good
well,
thing.
Curiosity, I think, is key to
they'll probably ruin it, like I did with my guitar.
yeah. But live and learn, and they can buy another one. But everything at that level, even today, it is curiosity. What if we did this? What if we did that?
Yeah.
And visiting China over the last couple of weeks as well, and seeing the different factories that we've worked with, many for 10, 15 years, they're not. They're family businesses a lot of the time, and they've grown with us, we've grown with them, and seeing the opportunities that arise through the relationships and bits that you establish whilst you're with them, it's phenomenal. And it inspires us, creativity and everything else that goes with it. So it's, keeping that in mind with the roasted range, that was kind of how it came about, of wanting to offer something affordable, but finished to a standard that we were happy to put our name on. We have the Roasted series now in stock, and we'll be shipping to stores, not in stock in England at the moment, but in stock in our warehouse. And we'll be shipping globally within the next couple of months, and probably available within the UK, definitely direct, within other markets. Watch this space for other key retailers supporting the instruments themselves. Because again, retail's not for the faint-hearted. We've always looked to support our dealers with the likes of PMT and others in the UK that have supported us from the dawn of time. We're very fortunate for those relationships. And also, amps are very difficult and different. You're not going to necessarily buy an amp off Amazon. Generally speaking, depending upon price point and position, yes, a practice amp might be appropriate to buy through Amazon, but if you're buying a gigging rig, most of the time you want to go and see it and feel it and experience it. So being on the floors in stores is a key part of the success of the Ashdown brand.
I went to PMT in Birmingham last week, and the whole Ashdown section there, that's what everyone's plugging into to demo the other bases, so like it's twofold.
There's a couple of reasons that I feel, if I'm wrong, please let me know. It's like I've always thought that every Ashdown product just works like straight away. If you set every amp at 12 and just turn the volume up, there's no oh god, there's so much, there's way too much low end, or there's no one in of treble. Everything kind of, I guess that kind of comes back around to the one knob.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Design
yeah.
initially. And the other point I was going to mention was my high school had an Ashdown mag combo in yep. the music department. Yeah. It was one bass amp and a Marshall MG combo, yep. and that's yeah. it. And then I went to sixth form. Guess what amp there was in the corner? And then I went to uni, and there was Ashdown heads and cabs.
Yep.
It's almost like whether you like it or not, you're always there.
yeah. And like sometimes price people points. Can think, yeah, and that was key as well. But it was always about supporting education. But the studios that were available to us, I mean, working with Pirate Studios, around the UK and, yeah, I was just and about Europe. To mention, yeah. It's been key to being able to support that. And it's been, yeah, fundamental to our success, supporting colleges and schools. And, yeah, since day one, we offer great educational support in that respect. And think that the future, I'd rather give an amp to an upcoming bass player than I would to U2 or anyone like that that we're fortunate to work with. But yeah, we'd always support the up-and-coming unsung hero more so than the bigger superstar that's potentially got the budget to support a purchase of a backline. And yeah, we're very fortunate with those relationships.
It kind of feels like in today's age of like social media, you would traditionally assume that conversation to be the opposite way around, where big fancy influencer or, you know, Johnny Dibble, or like this guy, or like big artist in big band, for example, would get all the free stuff when necessarily, I'm not saying this is you, they might already have the budget available, whereas that that student or that struggling bass player in the teeny weeny band that, you know, is just about floating and really needs like I could really do with a bigger cab right now. I don't really think a lot of brands personally would do the association that you choose to go for. I think in the long run, that's better because to a lot of people, brand association and brand loyalty is very important. So I think the fact that you support the support you offer both for education and then to sort of up-and-coming artist is a very good move.
Yeah, no, it's important definitely to the longevity of the relationships we have and
yes,
and the brand itself. Yeah. One band, the Libertines, they first started working with us back in 2000-ish when they first started going somewhere. And it was just an opportunity. They bought an amp, I believe it was from the Bay Centre at the time, and subsequently they've gone on to use that. But they got in touch with us. And same with Biffy Clyro, they were on tour with the Cooper Temple Claws at the time, and James decided that he needed what Dids was using in this band, the Cooper Temple Claws. And James got in touch, well, his manager, Dee, at the time, got in touch with us after that tour, and we arranged for James to get an ABM amp, and they paid for it. And then subsequently, that was, 2002, and Biffy Clyro have gone on to be one of the biggest and hardest working rock bands that Scotland has produced, and they've done really well for themselves. But you support the younger band, up and coming bands, and we've been very fortunate for the places and times we've been with them. And yeah, from 16 years old, I had a business card that said Artist Liaison, and I'd be the kid that would wait at the back of a venue to meet the bass player and give him a business card. From Badly Drawn Boy at the time to the Libertines to Razorlight to the Young Knives, Dirty Pretty Things, Cooper Temple Claws, and others of that era. Who else? Block Party at the time. Yeah. System of a Down, completely opposite spectrum. A lot of these relationships we've never taken for granted, and we're very fortunate. But you do kind of, as a 16-year-old kid, pinch yourself at the opportunities and moments that we've had, and I've been in, and we've been in as a family, and like some really proud moments of appearances, like U2 when they played Obama's inauguration on the steps of the White House, and seeing the VU meter glowing on stage, and traveling on the
bus.
That's a bit of me. Yeah, and traveling on the back of a bus through Brooklyn, and seeing that Ashdown VU meter, and even to the Foo Fighters' recent venture into filmmaking with the Studio 666.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
and getting that flicker of the VU meter, and even Vodafone at one point had this huge commercial ad campaign that just had someone plugging into an Ashdown and the VU meter just ticking on. But it was on screen for a good sort of 5 seconds. And
that'll do.
And it was everywhere.
5 seconds is all you need.
Yep, and it was everywhere. And and yeah, we're just very fortunate for the time and the place and the relationships we've established, but never take any of that for granted. And it's always about the product first and foremost. If it didn't work, no one would buy it.
I think the sign that you've got, obviously, amazing products, also comes from that infectious nature of someone hears it and goes, oh, what's that? I want loads, like you said, with Cairo. That exactly happened to me. That was my first introduction to Ashdown.
Excellent.
Was borrowing someone's rig, because they, you know, borrowing the headlines act setup. And it was a whole ABM rig. And I was like, oh my, I've never had bass like this. Like, my bass was magnified, you might say.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it felt so good. I went home and I was like, Mum, I need one of these. And
then, Mum, I need it.
Yes.
You don't understand.
And then,
get out of my room.
I remember my mum and dad bought me, because I bought the head, ABM Evo 3500, I think it was. It was my first actual head.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And then I needed a cab, and my mum and dad surprised me with it. They were like, we've made you a cup of tea. And I was a grumpy teenager at the time. I was like, what? Oh, I came down. The cab was there. I was like, oh my God. And like, so I've got this fond memory of just that, wanting that sound. You know, it's the first time I was like, wow, like this sounds incredible behind
me. Thank you. That's fundamentally what we've relied upon. It is word of mouth, and it is hear it to believe it in that sense. And a lot of people echo that story of it. And we're very fortunate to be many people's first bass amp, and people hold that memory in heart. I mean, even Joe's first bass amp was an Ashdown, and so many subsequent stories of, that was my first amp, and like, oh, that was my dad's amp, and my dad lent it to me. Like, we had Matt Barnes from You Meet at Six down the other week, and I didn't realise, but he'd borrowed his dad's amp for the first time and used that ever since. And it was in a Mag 300, and that was the first amp they took out on tour.
Wow.
And that's been the only amps he's ever known and used. And yeah, we're very fortunate for that. Timing and everything else like that, being 1997 and having kind of the heritage of amplification already from Trace Elliott to Moore.
Times with the amps are moving on.
Yeah.
Got digital creeping up and all different places, what people...
But we tried to kind of be ahead of that, and we came up with the Superfly back in whenever that was. I'll have to look at the calendar, but I'd say about 2004 to 2006-ish. And that thing was the first Class D bass amp, fully programmable, MIDI controllable, and everything that went with it. And that was opened up through a visit to China actually at the time, and seeing some of the technologies that were available within the PA market, and what could be done with parametrics and EQs and shaping. And Ashdown Labs was formed at that time. I think it was about 2004, 2005, thereabouts. Subsequently, you try and remain innovative, but yet develop something for a reason. There's no point developing something that doesn't have a purpose. Even today with the CTM-15, it's a desktop tube amp. Not many people were asking for them. However, it was a tool. It was everyone's offering, get this tube emulated overdrive that's available in 7 different plugins and everything else that goes with it. Why not just for the money buy an amp that actually, it's not emulated.
Yeah.
It is a valve distortion. It does have a valve transformer isolated DI output on it. It can be used without a load connected.
And I guess it's like bringing that modern technology twist to a traditional kind of vintage sound and product. I think that's great, bringing that all together in one and not just going, full digital, we're going to try and emulate it as much as possible. It's just bringing the useful part into the vintage.
And trying to find a practical approach to gear remaining physical. It's the key to our business, really. We make amplifiers, boxes, and recently we did the Mannheim Guitar Summit show in Germany. Great show. Thank you for having us. But it's a silent show, and we make amplifiers. And it becomes very difficult to demo an amplifier when its whole purpose is to make you louder at a silent show. But they had the amp room downstairs, but again, you have to go downstairs and find it and get lost and plug in and make some noise. But it works and I see that approach, but it becomes difficult as well when you listen to these headphones. The amp sounds great. And yeah, the headphone market, again, diversifying into meters, I suppose. That was a need to diversify and also trying to retain the brand's identity with the VU meter into a headphone was a difficult thing to achieve. And some people called us mental. Some people still call us mental. You can't see the meter on the side of your headphone when you're wearing a pair of headphones. But it wasn't about that. It's as much our logo as anything, but it still needed to be practical and function.
I mean, no one's sat there when they're playing their bass just looking at the VU meter, right? It's behind
it. Honestly, a few of them have. It's amazing. You turn up at shows. Yeah. But no, they don't exactly. It serves a purpose. And with the OV1B connects, in ANC mode, they function as a decibel level meter to measure your surroundings. In standard Bluetooth mode, they register the decibel output of your device that you're listening through. So we've had a fair few concerned parents buy it, but it needed to have a practical approach. It needed to have a reason and a purpose, not just to be a gimmick, as much as it's our logo, as much as of anything else. And yeah, going back onto silent shows and bringing it back around to the reason, having people play through headphones, it was the need to diversify, and to be able to kind of replicate bass through a pair of headphones isn't an easy thing to do. Where it feels as much as it does through a cabinet.
And I find often with bass, you want to crank it up and have that feeling, because that's half of the experience. But you can't get that without the room shaking or annoying neighbours, you know, or things like that. So I think it's absolutely
and developing that further on to what we've got coming out in the next couple of months. We'll be launched at the NAMM show in 2024. Yeah, crikey, we're going in 2024. Yeah, what we're doing there is developing that further into the kind of the habits of bass players, moving more towards in-ear use and purposes, but trying to replicate a lot of that feel is key, especially within the some of the new products we've got coming out. What we can do for the bass community is produce quality products that stands the test of time, engineered to last and trusted by the best. We've kind of got that down at the moment, and I'm very proud of what the team here is able to achieve, being a little family. And my father's still actively involved in the business. That don't get any he's not going anywhere. I wouldn't have it any other way, really, because he's always been that driving force for us as a brand. And for him, this has been his everything, really, for the last 30 years almost, and prior with his other entity, another 20 years on that. So for what he's done for the bass community, I tip my hat and hope to continue it, really. Yeah. It's an incredible legacy to be a part of. A lot of people don't realise we're a little family business.
I had no idea. And genuinely had no idea.
Kind of that was the aim. When Dad had his old company at Trace Elliott, at one point they had 205 staff, and they were a big, big corporate company. He vowed never to do that again, really, and trying to keep kind of a small company big image was always the approach that we wanted to take. And, we've been very fortunate to date to kind of carry that forward.
I think we'll round things off with some audience submitted questions.
Okay, fantastic.
Together.
Okay.
And one of them ties really nicely into that, I think.
Cool.
Somebody kind of knows about the size of the company, you know. Yeah. How involved is everybody in the building of one product? You know, how does it go from this idea into it's out there a bit, we're selling it?
It sort of starts, generally speaking, on an idea on my computer, and then subsequently I have an argument with my father about the feasibility, and then I go downstairs and have further arguments with Dave Green, our electronics engineer, as to the feasibility of the product that I've envisioned or come up with through a conversation, thought this would be a good idea. And then I then walk away from that conversation with Dave and let him get down to the nitty-gritty of the schematic, and then subsequent reviews, and then leave Dad with Dave for a significant amount of time whilst I move on to the next thing, and then come back to it. So generally speaking, we all have an input, and from the conception, I'll pass it by Joe and Georgina and Chris here, and even my mum will have an input. If she thinks something looks rubbish, she will tell me.
that's the level. Like if mum says yes, absolutely, we're good.
There's an element of that.
We've had a question regarding the roasted series, obviously, and we've played them today, and it's really impressive to see that at such a low price point, how like rock solid you feel. Like,
Thank you.
I think you run the chance of, like, with a lower priced instrument of, I can see where the cost cutting was at the end of the day, but
yeah.
I just don't see that. Is the short way of describing it? Will there be more from the roasted range? We've had quite a few people ask, will you do a 5-string?
If the demand is there, potentially. At the moment, this will be it for the foreseeable future with the models that we're offering. There might be an element, but again, what we can do in custom shop bits and various other bits with the support of the bass community, the sky's the limit, really. But not looking to deviate too far from the shapes that we've established, or the models that we've established within those. The soap is actually a variant. It was a happy mistake to an extent. I'll tell you the story, actually. I wasn't going to, but I will. It was...
Exclusive.
Yeah, the Saint Daily soap Express. Came about by a genuine mistake from the factory, who misread a drawing and ended up building what I thought I was receiving was the Capri, which is a 30-inch short-scale bass with a single soap bar pickup. Small, nice, defined body, beautiful little instrument. Instead, I unboxed what was labelled as the Capri and thought, that's definitely not a 30-inch neck. That's a 34-inch neck. That's not the right nut width.
What is this?
Yeah, what is this? And a quick panic and a quick discussion with the factory. And we ended up with the Saint Soap.
And it was born.
And it was.
And it's pretty good as well.
It's awesome. It was a really happy mistake. It's a very well-rounded instrument. Simple, effective. I love the fact that you put flats on it because that's what I wanted to ship it with. But they're already fit with rounds, so I missed that opportunity, sadly. I didn't want to waste a load of stainless steel strings. So it's a great instrument and a really happy mistake. But there's elements of that that will develop further within the Saint, not mistakes.
happy mistakes.
Yeah, happy mistakes.
At least it didn't come with like a massive body.
A huge hole.
Yeah, exactly. A massive body and then a 30-inch. No, it works. It's a great instrument. And you get those sometimes in production and manufacturing. You don't know until you build it what you're going to get. And kind of you end up with things that look great on paper, look great 3D and everything else that goes with it. But when you physically build it, it looks like a dog's breakfast. And you think, and you re-go back to the drawing board and start again. It happens. I've got amps that have sat on my laptop and not got any further. A few metalworks, a few bits and circuit boards and preamps and all sorts, but they'd never really develop into anything more than, because you don't get the spark for the idea, and a lot of ideas go further with sparks, and hence the comments. And the roasted series could go further and probably will go further. I think we're actually going to make a left-handed version through popular demand.
That was another question that people
of one model particularly, as to which it will probably be the Saint. We can't make a left-handed of every model because, unfortunately, there aren't that many. I know I'm pigeonholing here, but we have a minimum quantity that we have to make to get the price point.
Otherwise, the stock you'll be hoarding here will be all left-handed.
Yeah, exactly. and it's not a very good thing to sit on stock.
Last question, then. Cool. What would you say is... right now, your number one bass?
My number one bass right now? It's going to be the Saint. And it's a roasted one. The pink one that you adopted for a number of weeks that I've been missing here.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
That's the only reason we're here, just to get it back.
No. that in itself, it's playable, it's great. You've got the best of everything. You've got the articulation that you need from a rail at the front, and then having the P pickups there, turning it on and off. You can go from Paul Simonon to James Johnston in an instant. Even getting those Mike Dirnt sort of twangs to come through. Mm-hmm. The pickups are well done. The CTS style pots are phenomenal. They work. You've got everything you need in that instrument, and actually with the smaller nut width on that version, it's great because it's a jazz neck on an alternative body shape.
Yeah, but it feels more like well rounded in your hand, like fits so nicely.
Yeah, very, very happy with it. If I'm going to go for another base of complete and utter desire and passion, it would always be, for me, my old man had a mad collection of Travis Beans at one point. And the aluminium necks and everything else that went with it, that inset and the old Kramers to an extent, that aluminium neck was something I've always loved and craved, and can't afford a Travis Bean anymore, and don't want to wait the time for others. So, the idea of an aluminium neck's quite exciting, and what can be done there.
There's no one doing those on an affordable scale at the minute.
No. So the opportunity to visit manufacturers and others, you end up building relationships with material suppliers and such, and you get opportunities. So you never know what might be in store for the Saint Bases and the Ashdown Roasted series in the future. But what other bases? Grabbers. Always loved a grabber.
Here we go. Grabbers and Rippers.
Grappers and Rippers, P bases. I got given once, which was phenomenal, by Mike Dirnt, one of his signature American P bases. And it's just a great instrument, having something so articulate yet big. I can't beat a P bass.
Simple and sophisticated.
Yeah, completely. From Guns of Brixton to Longview, it does everything you could ever want it to. Recently, actually, a friend of mine, Norman Rockroy, gave me a call about the potential of acquiring his rhythm stick, which was the...
I ask Chris about that all the time, and he always denies my rhythm stick.
I'm
working up to it.
And that opportunity came about, and whether or not I'd ever put a figure on what that would be worth, I couldn't. But that dream of that instrument is just an incredible bass, and the history that goes with it. A lot of bass acquisition syndromes, but I sold a lot of my instruments over the years to fund everyday life, really, to be honest. And today I'm very happy with the bases that we manufacture and make, so much so that, it really is a go-to. I'm looking around to see what else is here. I mean, I've got one of the John My Young Music Man bongos, which is awesome, but I can't play it. I'm not quite, it's too many strings and too small a piece of wood. But it sounds incredible, and getting those dynamics that John achieves, a phenomenal piece of kit. But no, give me a P bass every day of the week, and or a PJ, and can't really go wrong. I had this Status at one point that was phenomenal, and I've always got a lot of time for Status, growing up in that 80s era of Trace Elliot and Mark King and everything else that went with it. That was my childhood in a nutshell, really, was that bright, articulate piano string.
So we're going to see some bass. LEDs in these.
No.
Endless roasted range coming 2024, confirmed.
No. But instruments, basses, give me a P bass every day of the week.
Beautiful.
It's almost as if he got it right the first time.
Yeah, it really is. Leo knew what he was doing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
It's an absolute pleasure.
On this episode today. It's been amazing. All of the links to all of Ashdown's gear, including the new roasted range, will be linked down below. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you're listening, then just head over to the description where you can find all of those lovely links. Again, on your listening platform of choice, please rate us 5 stars because it helps something to do with algorithms to help us reach more people. And the more people do that, the bigger we can make this, and visit lovely people and interview lovely people just like this. So thank you so much. Chris, is anything, where can people find you on the internet before we sign off?
You know the drill by now. You can find me pretty much everywhere under That Guy on Bass. I have a band called Darla. I plug it at the end of every episode. Please give us a listen. Being a small band is hard. How about you? Where can everyone find you, Johnny? And I must say, it's been nice to be this close to you for the second time ever.
Absolutely. Ever. Absolutely. We'll be sharing a hotel bed later tonight, and it's going to be very steamy indeed. So come on. We'll cut that. No, we won't. We're not cutting that bit.
Not cutting that.
Note for Johnny, do not cut.
Do not cut.
For me, you can find me on YouTube, just /Johnny Dibble. It's my name, and exactly the same on Instagram as well. These are the main places where I'm hanging out. Dan, anything else you want to say before we sign off?
Follow, like, share Ashdown Music. You can find us on all of the social channels. And check out ashdownmusic.com. Our YouTube channel, subscribe. There's some incredible content that the wonderful team here put together from Joe and Georgina. Check us out and follow, like, share, spread the word. If anyone wants to come and visit, generally speaking, we're probably going to have another open day around Christmas time, which after the success of the one last year, it was great having people over. So we're probably going to do an open day in that sense. So keep an eye out and we'll let you know. Thank you very much for coming down and making the effort to talk with us. We never take anything for granted in that respect. We might be seen to be a big global brand, but we're very much a family of like-minded musicians and bass players that have a passion for everything bass. It's all about the bass. And thank you very much for your time.
You too. Once again, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.